officer, and that's where they were waiting for him. They arrested him. So they take his pants back because she had told them, "I stabbed him." And sure enough, his blood also was at the scene. He told them the stab in his leg was a spider butt bite that got infected. Because it was like, you know, ooey and gooey. And
wait, how many, how long after?
3 days.
Okay, so was it infected? Probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got stabbed and you were kind of like, yeah. Ooh. So when they took his pants back, they're like, what is that? Oh, it's a spider bite that got infected.
Right. You're not sure, buddy. Good. Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Wazoo Talk, a true crime podcast. I am your host, Gabrielle Weimer, and today I have a story for you that is going to send chills down your spine. As a woman, this is probably one of my greatest fears, and I want to ask my listeners, how many of you, when you walk to your car, you look in the back seat before you get in? How many of you, when you get home late at night, you check every single hiding place in your home? You look in the closet, you look under the beds, you pull back the shower curtain, every single place, under the couch, or when you go and stay the night at a hotel by yourself. Maybe like us, we're away on training. How many of you scan the room looking for the boogeyman? Because I do. I've done that for ever. Since I was probably a little girl, I've always done that. And even in my college years, living alone, and even now, for all the things I see, I'm always checking for the boogeyman, because that is one of my greatest fears, for someone to come in or to surprise me and to be attacked. So today I have a very special guest with me sitting right here. We have the lovely Stephanie Turndrup. She has been a crime scene investigator since 2009. She has done crime scene investigation in the state of Nevada and here in California. So welcome to the Wazoo Talk podcast.
Hi, Gabrielle. Thank you for having me over.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm really excited. And I know the story that you are about to tell is graphic, and it's probably one of the worst cases that I've ever heard. So without further ado, please, The show is yours. Take it away.
So yeah, as you mentioned, Gabrielle, this is one of the stories that will send chills down your back. And it is scary for especially women, because we do fear the boogeyman. We do go into rooms. We go looking for under beds, especially in hotel rooms. This is the one place that I would just like go open the bathroom, keep the bathroom door open all the time. But this case... it was a complete stranger. It was a complete stranger who broke into her house and attempted to rape her, attempted to kill her when he couldn't rape her. And like all major cases, it doesn't start when you're at work. It's usually a call out.
Right.
So I received a call out. It was a stabbing, and usually you don't get so much of the story. It's just like a stabbing. You're like, yeah, okay, halfway asleep, I'll be there.
Right. What time of night was it? Late?
It was like early morning. So I want to say like maybe 3 a.m. I got the call. By the time I got there, it was like 4 a.m. Because I do remember the morning shift did come and help me. I get to the scene and it's quiet. There's no buzzing. And like, you know, usually at crime scene, there's loud people talking and everyone is asking everything. No, the crime scene was very quiet. Taped up, officer standing at the door. I walked in and I'm like, hey, so can you guys brief me? Right. And you could tell from the officer's faces, like it was a bad case. Because, you know, officers sometimes like, yeah, just someone broke into someone's house. No, this one was like, someone broke into her house.
What was the house setting? Was it an apartment, like a single story home?
It was in an apartment building, but it was a first story house.
Okay.
You can access it from a courtyard. You can access it from the street. And it's kind of tucked away. Like it's across the street from the station where I work.
Oh, but so it's right next to the police department.
Like you could walk. You could walk to the station. But it's also tucked away. First story house. windows. You know, you can just walk around and you see the windows. If shades are not down, you could see inside the house. So he broke in through a window. But when I first arrived there, I asked the officers, okay, what happened? And they said, she's at the hospital. Detectives are with her at the hospital. We don't have the full story. All we know is a stranger broke into her house, assaulted her, stabbed her multiple times, but she also managed to stab him and he ran away. That's all I had. Okay. At that point, I'm like, okay, do we have a point of entry? Because usually, like, you just want to assess the situation. Like, right. What do you have here? Do you have a point of entry? And they said, no, we don't know the point of entry as of now. So I'm okay. Can you give me a walkthrough? Well, just off the bat, like, you're walking, there's like those like three steps to get to the front door from the front yard. We'll call it front yard.
Right.
And there's blood everywhere. Like, there's blood on the stairs. There's blood on the handle of the door. And the door was like a metal gate.
Right.
Protected
like
door.
Like a security door?
Security door. And then the door. And there was like blood everywhere. Mm. They opened the door to give me a walkthrough. And you have this feeling like, oh, it's a cozy house. It's a warm house. But then you're like, but there's the blood and there's furniture everywhere, lamps. You could tell right away there was a struggle.
Right.
There's blood on the walls, I remember. There's like a blood, footprints in blood.
Mm.
So you're like, oh, okay. So that must be the victim.
Right.
Barefoot walking.
Right.
You continue and you have a dining room area. You have a kitchen. Those were kind of clean, like intact.
Okay.
And then you walk around the corner and that's her bedroom. And there's a bathroom. The floor of the bathroom are covered in blood. Mm-hmm. Like you could tell like someone was standing there, bloody feet and dripping blood.
Right.
The bedroom, blood on the bedding, blood on the walls. Wow. So you're like, this is, it's not just a one stab. It's not like, it's not a tiny struggle. It's someone who was fighting for their life.
Right.
And this is where it hit me like, whoa, like, you know, the time, all this time you were like on auto,
yeah.
But then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I just woke up.
Like the severity of the scene hit you.
This is a crime scene. A stranger, like this is a whodunit case. It's not like, oh yeah, we walked in and the husband was here and he's arrested. We're just gonna process the scene.
Right.
No, it's like literally get on it. There is someone out there who did this to this woman who is just still at large because they had no clue at that point who it is. But she was able to give description of him to a point where like they knew what they kind of were looking for. Like they knew they were looking for a male subject.
Right.
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 So I back out of the house and I'm like, okay, let's start from the outside until detective comes back. Mm-hmm. And he has a more complete story for me. Not a complete story, but kind of guide me. Because at this point,
right. You're kind of like the same as the officers. You're like, this is what we have. We have no idea exactly what went down here.
In a scene huge like this, you want to work smart and not hard. Like you're not going to get down and mark every single blood stain, blood drop and collect it just blindly and come up like, oh, by the way, no, he was not stabbed. Like he has no blood here. So, oh, okay. I just collected.
You don't want the victim's blood. You want suspect blood.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That's what you're looking for. So I start on the outside and I start noticing, and as I mentioned, there's windows around the entire apartment, right? I start seeing the screen windows.
Okay.
Had like, if someone just poked them with their fingers, like little poke marks, they're ripped, but just like someone just inserted their fingers in there and ripped them.
Okay.
And you could see disturbance in the dust right on that glass window behind the screen.
Okay.
And so you're photographing as you're going. You're photographing as you're going. All of them, some of them ripped more than possible. But you can tell like the window has not been opened.
Right.
Because you could tell that it's still secured and locked. It had those two locks, top and bottom. And I get to the living room window. And I notice the screen of that window is not only ripped, but it's partially trapped into a closed window.
Ah, okay.
And there is beautiful disturbance in the dust fingerprints. And you're like, aha.
It's an aha moment.
It's I'm getting goosebumps now. Because it was amazing. It was like, oh my gosh, I might have something here.
Right.
So because it's disturbance in the dust and you probably like see it, we're always scared to put the powder on it and like have it disappear in front of our eyes.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I set up my tripod. I take comparison quality photos of the print and I'm like, this has to be it.
So you had beautiful fingerprint, like ridge detail in dust.
Yes, like four of them.
Four fingerprints.
And you could see the swipe and where they rested.
You see that because, movement. You see that movement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was like, this has, like,
see that
we don't put time on fingerprints, but clearly this window wiped clean. It had to be done overnight. Right. Like, otherwise, you'd see another layer of dust.
Yeah.
So I photograph it because I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to put powder on this print and it's just going to disappear. Right. And I'm going to sit here and cry.
Right.
And photograph it. And then I was like, I'm going to process it before I go in there.
Okay.
And I process it. I put the powder. And it's like a magical moment. The powder brought it even better.
Wow.
Like, it did not disappear on me.
Wow.
It was still there. I lift it. At that point, I had my the day shift partner come in to help me.
Okay.
And
so how many hours are you at right now? Are you still within the first couple hours?
So day shift comes in at 6 a.m.
Okay, so it's still fresh. It's
still only
a couple hours in.
Yes, okay. We're still outside. But I mean, you know, you're photographing all these windows and you're trying to put a scale next to the rib because you never know what you're going to need eventually.
Exactly. Very smart.
And you're swabbing them.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like some probably crime scene people out there are like, what are you swabbing?
But it's touch DNA.
Yeah, but it's, I was like, again, we're working with a stranger, with a whodunit.
Right.
So I wasn't going to like spare anything.
No, you put all stops out, right?
Correct.
Any little tiny piece you're going to take.
And I said to her, could you call the detective and inform him that we have this print that we developed and see what he says.
Right.
So we called the detective and I don't remember exactly what happened, but I remember us getting to a point like, okay, we're going to secure the scene, have the officer stand by, and we're going to run back to the station. And as I mentioned, it was like we could have walked to the station.
Right.
And we're going to run this print. And I remember standing there in the office. She's sitting on the APHIS terminal and I'm starving because like I got called out right at 3 a.m. I'm there and I know at this point it's gonna take us all day,
right?
So I grab something from my pantry at work and I'm eating it, and she tells me, do you want me to put it in? I said, please, like,
right.
she puts it in,
right?
And she's like, oh no. And I look over her shoulder, I was like, oh shit.
Right.
Oops, excuse me.
It's okay. It's a no shit moment. Yes.
It's a gut oh shit moment. And we're looking at it. So I ID it because for every ID in our policy, you have to verify it before you even inform the detective.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, ID. She verifies it. And we call the detective. We're like, we have a name for you.
Wow.
And we didn't even have the chance to live that like yes moment,
right? Because it's like,
because we're like
back to the scene
because at this point it still prints on the exterior side of a window.
Wow.
Like
and we know, but there's a way to explain it away, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Right.
Of course, so we go back to the scene. At that point we had the detective who was at the hospital with the victim right before she entered surgery.
Okay.
He was able to get us extra information such as the knife he used on her came from her butcher block.
Oh, with inside her house.
From her house. She recognized it and she knows it because she just had bought those knives. And she, like, they were like the slick, nice black on black
knife.
And the assault happened in her bedroom. He did assault her prior to that in the living room. Like, we're trying to see, okay, where am I collecting DNA from? Where am I collecting blood from?
Right.
She stabbed him in her bedroom, but they did walk out. She grabbed lamps and everything to throw at him. Like, all these been tossed, like, after, like,
so she was. He gets in there. He attacks her in her bedroom.
Correct.
There's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
He then removes himself, and is she following him?
So he comes in, breaks in through that window.
Okay.
grabs, arm himself with a knife from her kitchen.
Okay.
Knowing that there's someone in the house. Like at this point, right. He knows like someone he knows. Is in the house.
Okay.
Why would you arm yourself otherwise?
Right.
She hears it. She has this beautiful little dog that was still at the scene while we're there. So she hears her dog bark. And you know, if you have a dog, you know barking as like...
There's a
difference of barking.
There is. There's like barking at a raccoon and then giving a low bark.
Yeah,
sometimes like, with a growl that there's...
Danger.
Danger.
Danger, yes. Yeah. So she says, she hears that. So she gets up to investigate, like, what's going on? Is someone around the house? And that's where she sees his shadow. Oh, God. Just retelling the story, even though, like, it's not me.
It's like, but
because,
heart-
like, you can place yourself in that house where it happened. And when she says, I could see the shadow, you can, like, literally know exactly what she's talking about because you stand there and you could see a shadow. Like, yeah. You know exactly what she's talking about. And she sees the shadow of someone, and she's in the living room at this point. She sees him in the kitchen, so he comes into the living room, grab her by her hair,
right?
And at the scene, we found a strand of hair. He grabs her by her hair, starts off as like, "Give me what you have," and she's like, "I don't have much." She walks him into the guest room where she had like maybe a $20 or something. She gives it to him,
right?
And he walks her to her bedroom, and that's where he starts attempting to sexually assault her.
Right.
And he pulls on her underwear. He pins her onto the bed. And the struggle starts happening, and she sees the knife in his hand, and she knew that he's going to just rape her, right?
Right.
She knows it.
Right. She knows what's coming.
She knows what's coming, and that's where she just, like, started fighting. Like, I'm going to fight for my life. What's there to lose, right, at this point? And during the struggle, he stabs her multiple times.
Jesus.
Stabs her in the arm and the fingers. During the struggle, somehow she gets hold of the knife, or accidentally, while the knife is in his hands, she manages to stab him.
Right. So
they fall on the other side of the bed, and that's where we find some evidence: cell phone, headphones, a tap card. For those of you who don't know what tap card is, the Metro card. It's
right.
A Metro system in LA.
Right.
And there were there. So we found those on the side of the bed that he fell.
Excellent.
So at that point, you're thinking like, oh, I stabbed him. I hurt him. He's going to get more aggressive.
Right.
Well, she doubled down on her effort to save her life.
Dang.
And she starts kicking. She grabs things. She throws at him. And yes, at this point, he is trying to flee for his life.
Right.
And she want to make sure that he gets out of her house. Like, he's not going and getting something else to bring it back.
Right.
She follows him into the hallway.
Okay.
Out into the living room, grabbing heavy lamps. And I know they're heavy because I had to package those things. and she's throwing it at him. He had a struggle at the door because the door was still locked.
Oh,
she has
screen.
Double
that's
locks,
right.
And she has the metal security screen on that door. So he had a struggle there,
yeah.
And that was later like a point of focus for us to collect DNA and to collect blood and things like. Because you know, when you're struggling to open a door, you're gonna have touch
you're touching
DNA.
Yeah.
And he flees. He goes. She was able to tell us that he goes westbound on that street.
Okay.
So we knew kind of like what direction. Also, there was a blood trail.
Nice.
There was a blood trail that it could at that point you're thinking like it's the weapon just still dripping.
Right.
But it continues that you know that.
It's him.
It's him.
That's
it's,
amazing.
It, yeah.
That's
it's a donor.
Moment.
It's
right.
Not like just a passive drippage.
Yeah.
So she chases him out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she manages to call 911 and tell them what happened. It's a stranger. I don't know who did it. I'm hurt. And, you know, they send help.
Help
of course.
Me.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. So the part of the detective was able to rely to me is like the knife is still outstanding. It's this what it looks like. This is where it happened.
Right.
And I managed to like on the phone be like, hey, is she still like cohesive enough to ask her, was that window open?
Right.
Because at that point I entered and she has those decorative Christmas lights that have like the plastic bulbs.
Oh, okay.
Around the window that where I developed those prints from.
Ah, okay.
And I'm thinking like, oh, a couple of them are broken right on the floor. Right. Like if you were to play the scenario in your head, someone stepped from outside into the window, crushed them. Yeah.
So you have the broken screen, you have the smear mark, and you have freshly crushed light bulbs.
Light bulbs.
Perfect. That's great.
And she said, I don't remember what he said specifically, but he said, no, that window should be intact.
Okay.
Like, so that's enough for me to be like, you know what? Let's focus on this window as point of entry. You know, you're processing the point of entry. You already had developed a suspect name. Later on, we do ID him on the inside of the window. So it's not just prints on the exterior side of the window.
That's true.
So we process the interior side of the window along with other stuff. And we do develop prints that later we ID'd to him, to that same suspect that we ID'd on the exterior side of the window.
Good. Oh, so great. So now you have prints on the exterior and you have prints on the interior.
Exactly. I mean, amazing. You can explain exterior maybe, but
interior?
You should not have
access
to an interior side of a glass window when there's a screen window.
Right.
So we process those, collect the evidence, collect the bedding, collect everything, right? You're pretty much like packaging the house at this point because she saw him in the kitchen. Anything in the kitchen could have been touched by him. Right. Anything in the hallway could have been touched by him prior to him taking her to the bedroom.
Right, because you don't know how long he was in there making his way through. Yeah,
true. Okay. And he must have walked from the living room to that kitchen.
Right.
So you are pretty much processing everything in the house.
And
there were those evidence that I mentioned on the other side of the bed where the struggle happened. We collected those. The tap card came out to be a good lead.
Right. Now all those tap cards, are you able to track like what transit they got on and times?
So
is that how they track it?
Prior to this case, I had no clue because I don't use the metro.
Right.
But how it was explained to me is they sync with like, you know, you scan them, like you tapped into station two, whatever.
Right.
And there's a video. So they sync with the video of the time. So they were able to see him on video.
That's awesome.
Based on the time that he had used the tap card.
Okay.
So that became a good piece of evidence. Also his cell phone.
Right. Cell phone. Yeah.
He had dropped his cell phone.
Thank you.
Yes. And he had dropped a credit card that we thought like at first, like, oh, was there like multiple people here?
Right.
Sure enough, the credit card probably was stolen because the name came out to like not him and not anyone related to the case. So we had all these evidence building up. Right.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, that fingerprint moment was like, yes.
Yes.
So we're at the scene, pushing on the 12-hour mark here, literally 12 hours almost, and package all the evidence, take them back, and we had the night shift now come in.
Okay.
And that was my night off, but I got called out, and it was my night off.
Okay.
So the night shift person comes in, and we're telling him, we still have that knife outstanding. Like we have a knife outstanding, whether it's with the suspect and he took it, whether or not, we don't know. So he starts canvassing the area. You know, you have this fresh eyes.
And right. Energy, fresh eyes.
Exactly.
Sleep.
Yes. Yes. And sure enough, he walks around past the building, the apartment building, right before he crosses into the other street.
Right.
He found the knife in bushes.
Awesome.
And we're like, are we in a movie at this point? Like you got the evidence like right there.
Everything is just
like falling in place. So of course the knife, you have the weapon now, got packaged. And
did the knife had blood on it?
Yeah.
Was it visible?
Yes. Yes. Awesome. Yes. I mean, apparent blood, right?
Apparent blood, right?
Yes. At that point, we're still apparent blood.
Reddish brown stains. The language of crime scene investigators.
Exactly. You just have to be right. So just apparent blood at that point. So they take the knife gets processed. At this point, we have all these evidence, take back to the lab, decide what needs to be right away rushed and processed. The DNA needs to be sent out. And these conversations happens between detective. They will call on us and be like, hey, which DNA would you think we should send out?
Right.
Because our agency does not process our own DNA. We have to send them out to the county.
Gotcha.
To process DNA. So that needs to be rushed. And, you know, everyone was helping. At that point, it was like a team effort. Mm-hmm. You have the morning shift coming in, helping me, like helping me a lot, because I needed so much powder. As a matter of fact, my partner, the day shift, it was the beginning of her week.
Right.
She had to come back with detective the next day
to continue
to process that door for blood. Because remember how I said that door so much blood, but also touched DNA. We need it from it.
Right.
So after the detective had more information, they went back together and processed that door for blood, like collected blood, collect additional DNA swabs. So we had all these evidence and we brought them back to detectives, and it's up to them now, right?
Yeah.
During that time, because we had a name, they looked up the name, right?
Right.
Well, that person associated with the name is on parole. And turns out he has a parole interview, or he has to check in with his parole officer.
Right.
In 3 days or so. So they're like, oh, okay. While we're still looking for them, for him, because they're actively looking for him, we're just going to go ahead and just show up to his parole. Now, pushing 3 days after the scene, 3 or 4 days, he shows up to his parole interview. He was so I'm thinking to myself, I mean, he's so cocky that he thought he got away with a murder, with a crime. I mean, at this point, he doesn't know that she survived, right?
Right.
That he's just going to show up and carry his life. Like, you know, just like nothing no happened. Like,
just here to check in.
Yeah, just here to check in. Make sure, like, you
everything's
know,
going great.
Exactly.
Wow.
And he shows up and they're there waiting for him.
That's awesome.
Book him, take him to the station. Another one of my partners processed him.
Okay.
Photograph, you know, collect clothing, photograph injuries.
Right.
Well, he takes his pants down, right?
Yeah.
And there's the stab, because she had already told us she stabbed him.
Okay.
And they ask him, hey, what's that? What's up with this? Oh, that's a spider bite that got infected. Interesting.
Some monster spider from Australia or something.
Yes. He does not live in the same county that we live in. Right. And there's spiders that just, you know, almost take your leg off.
Right.
But so that was like, that was like, he was still even at that point thinking like, you're just going to work us and he's going to get away with it. It's just spider bite. I don't know what you're worried
about.
Not
a care in the world. Not nervous.
No.
Not even.
No.
Did he even question, why am I here?
You know? I wasn't there, so I don't know, but I remember that part because someone told me, like, do you believe what he said?
Yeah.
Well, I could. I mean, the guy did show up to an interview with his parole officer. Right. And that attitude carried on to the trial.
Right.
He was very obnoxious.
Yeah.
To a point where the judge had to excuse him. Like, his sentence was read without him there.
Wow.
Because he was trying to intimidate the victim on the stand. That's like jumping forward. But he was trying to intimidate the victim on the stand. He was just talking nonstop.
Right.
Like talking loud. Like just those things that, you know, you're already nervous enough.
Right.
To go on the stand, to face the person who assaulted you, almost killed you. And now you have him just back talking to you. And like just...
Wow.
So, yeah. His attitude just is outstanding overall.
Jeez. So now bringing it back.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys process the scene. You got some amazing evidence. I know detectives do great work, but you guys literally are the ones that cracked open that case immediately and handed detectives a nice, beautiful package of information.
I
full-heartedly give credit to you. And your crime scene investigation team.
Well, the entire team, yes. Right. We, like, at the end, the day we went to court, I called them the OG team.
The OG.
It was all of us in that court, even though only 50% of us still worked for that agency.
Wow.
And the other came from other agencies to testify.
Jeez. So now detectives are running with the case. They've identified their guy and they're doing their part. I want to take you back to that night. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you did share, I remember you said when you walked in, you immediately felt like, wow, this is a cozy apartment. Is there any, like, what else did you notice or that you can remember that really stuck with you or that you can take away or share with us mm-hmm. about that night? That is just, because would you say this is one of the most horrific scenes you've ever processed?
It was the most touching scene because it's one of those scenes you can relate to. And I know we always say, well, it could have been. No, but the scene, the victim was exactly my age.
Okay.
It's weird, but her apartment was decorated in a way that I would have decorated my apartment. Mm-hmm. The furniture she had is things that I would probably had in my cart.
Right.
And at that scene, I know if you talk to other CSI people, they would say, once we get in the scene, we're in the zone.
Like, right.
We're there to collect clues, document evidence.
Like, this is my job.
Yeah.
And I'm my job.
Correct, right? I feel like 13 years later, after I've done it for a while, I'm not ashamed to say sometimes I'm not in the zone. Sometimes things pull me away. Sometimes I get distracted. And what stands out for me in this scene, I've worked this scene for 12 hours, right? If I tell you like I was those 12 hours in the zone,
right.
I'd be lying. Right. I was thinking I'm hungry. Yeah. I was thinking I'm tired. But the scene itself, like I walked in and I felt like, hey, you know what? I'm so tired. I could totally sit on that couch and relax, which is right. It's weird. It's something you should probably not disclose because you're supposed to be like, you know, it's a crime scene. And like, how dare you think
this is
a comfy place. Someone was almost killed here like a few hours ago. What do you mean it's comfy? It was comfy. It was cozy. It was warm. It was perfect.
Right.
It was perfect until you look and like, oh,
and then you're reminded. The blood.
Yeah. It smelled like home. It smelled fresh. It didn't smell like...
You didn't smell the blood, though?
At that point, no. Remember, this scene happened at 3 in the morning.
Right.
The door was open at this point.
Okay.
And we're talking February.
So it's cool.
It's
not
cool.
Warm.
It's cool. Okay. Yes. And I remember at that point... point of entry window and I'm processing it and I look up, I'm like, wait a second, the curtains, right? Like I'm supposed to be focused, not on the curtains. The curtains have nothing to do with this crime other than they're right there by the point of entry.
Right.
I'm like, those aren't the same curtains I have ordered from, I'm not going to name the place.
From this really big company that ships
big company,
all the
yes,
time.
That, you know, takes all my money. But I just ordered those. And they're to be delivered anytime now because they're going to go in my guest room. Again, if I had thought this 10 years ago, I'd be ashamed to share it.
Right.
Because, again, I'm supposed to be, like, feeling all the feelings and the scene and, like, being part of the scene as, like, sad. And but... again, 13 years later, I'm not ashamed to say I'm a human. Sometimes something in the scene just distracts me and like I start like wandering and thinking.
I think that's a good quality to have though, because if you tried to put yourself that night in what she felt and the horror and the anxiety and the fear, you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be sitting here 13 years later in the career because it would have swallowed you alive. So I think it's a healthy defense mechanism. That's a defense mechanism you had because you're able to be like, I'm here to do this job. And yes, something horrific has happened here, but I can't sit in that space. I can't sit in that space of sadness or horror or grief because you wouldn't be able to do your job properly.
Correct.
You would be distracted another way. So don't feel guilty for liking someone's curtains in an apartment.
Yeah. Well, they were my curtains at one point. But yes, you're right. And I think you've mentioned before that those big crime scenes, those big crime scenes leave tiny dash or mark on your heart and you carry through.
You'll always remember this
scene.
You'll always remember it.
You'll always remember those tiny things that distracted you or like just took your mind off of it. Sitting in a house where someone almost got killed for 12 hours, you do need those moments. You need to just escape in your head for like a few minutes. And... that scene wasn't just the curtains.
Right.
I remember in her bedroom, right? There's like blood and but like it's beautiful bedding. It's white bedding. It's so like minimalistic, exactly like how, you know, the trend now. Like, yeah. Her house, when you walk in, if you can just ignore the blood and the tossed around lamps, it could belong in a magazine.
Right.
Like it's one of those houses that you stage and you take a picture and like you're just like featuring this vase or featuring this lamp. Or,
right.
So this is how her bedroom was too.
Right.
With the exception of the blood on the comforter, with the exception of tossed things around, those evidence that you already marked, like it's just a reminder, like this is a crime scene.
Yeah.
And I'm processing and I look over, because sometimes when you're taking over your overall pictures, you're just taking overall pictures. Right, sometimes you're on auto, especially early hours of the morning. And I look and I'm like, wow, that's a beautiful dress. And it was like this beautiful, I believe, ivory or champagne color cocktail dress hanging not in a closet, but like on the frame of the closet.
Okay, like on display kind of.
On display. Like, you know, right. I mean, I don't know about you, but like if you're going to like a nice party cocktail dress, you're trying to get the right earrings and the right necklace and the right shoes. So you display it so you can remind yourself like, maybe this looks. And I look over and I'm like, that's a beautiful dress. Like, oh my gosh. And I thought to myself, I wonder if in the middle of her struggle, she glanced over because it had like, it's right across from her bed. And she looked at this dress and thought, I have places to be. I have people to meet.
Yeah.
I have occasions to be at.
Yeah.
Like this, I'm not letting this person dictate what happens next to me.
Right.
And I'm going to fight.
Right.
Whether she thought it or not, I would never find out.
Right.
But to me, like
maybe
that was a tiny thing of the stuff that she was mentally adding up in her head to like I'm gonna fight and I'm gonna fight hard.
Because that dress is, I have a life to live. I have somewhere to be. I have an occasion to get to. This is not gonna stop me from living my life. It could be. It's the smallest thing, but it could be the world to somebody, right?
Exactly.
In that split second.
Yeah. Yes. So I remember thinking that about the dress. I tell my partner, I was like, I remember thinking to myself this stuff, but telling my partner, hey, when we powder the door, because her closet is close to the door, the bedroom door, let's make sure we don't get powder on this dress. Let's make sure when we're moving the evidence, we don't like, because it was intact. There was blood everywhere.
Yeah.
But this dress, it's like, honestly, I don't know why it was there,
right.
But it was intact. There's no blood on it. And my partner was like, seriously, this is what's bothering you now?
I'm like, yes, the dress.
Let's make sure that when she comes back home,
it's very important.
At that point, she's coming back home. Right. She is going to come back home. She is a survivor. Someone who fought this much and this hard is a survivor. And there will come home and this dress will be ready for her to carry on with her life.
Right.
So yeah, those two things stood out for me. And every time I think of that case, I think of the curtains, I think of the dress, I think of her dog on the bed, just sat there. And I didn't, and everyone's like, should we get them out? I was like, she's a she, I don't remember.
Right.
The dog is not bothering me. Once I want to collect the bedding, we'll have someone come and get them.
Right.
And I believe someone, a friend of hers or a neighbor of hers, showed up and collected the dog.
Okay.
But yeah, so not every crime scene you walk in has that crime scene feeling from the get-go.
Right. Like a dirty, people picture crime scenes like dirty, grimy, icky place.
Yes. Smelly, right?
Smelly. Just,
I mean,
gross.
You asked if I smelled the blood. At that point, I did not smell the blood.
And this was like a beautiful place with just this tornado of chaos that happened.
Correct. Yes. So if you ignore the path that she chased him out, if you could just like Photoshop this out, that living room, that bedroom is just magazine worthy.
Right.
So that's, and I kept thinking like, I mean,
eerie.
Crime scene do have, and I know, I mean, I've said it to people like, always crime scenes happen at like nasty places. Like you have the hoarder house.
Right.
And it's like the smelly house where they have so many cats and they never clean up and things like this.
Right.
No, not this house. This house was cozy, was comfy enough that literally when I got so hot, I took my jacket off and I found a place for it and I hung it. Because yes.
So that was crazy. That
that scene is my worst nightmare. I never, ever wish that upon anybody. Like, just hearing you tell this story, it makes my heart drop to my stomach. And it's crazy. So what are your biggest takeaways from the scene?
Aside from the scene being processed so well and so good, and we had the fingerprints, we had the video footage, we had the suspect's cell phone, we had his social media, we have the suspect tab card that synced into this video. We had all these evidence presented to jury. My biggest takeaway is this scene is different. This case is different because the victim was the hero of her own story. She was the one who fought tooth and nail, literally tooth and nail, to save her life. No one broke down her door and came and saved her. Like, you know, it was explained to us as kids, like, someone will come and save you. Right. No, this woman fought someone twice her size, and she saved her life by her own will, her own power, her own strength. And this could have been any of us. She's our age.
Right.
So this could have been you. This could have been me. And I know I mentioned something about the curtains, but this could connect us, right?
Right.
Like, right. I live by myself. I lived in a whole nother state by myself.
Right.
Had nobody. That could have been me. And I mentioned, like, her house is beautiful. It's intact. It's anything that I would have had in my house. Add the curtains, of course. It is random, stranger.
Right.
But it's not random that it could have happened to any of us.
Right.
And she fought. She fought and she won. And she wrote the rest of her life story. She did not let anyone else write the rest of her story. And for that, she will be a hero in my eyes forever.
Forever. Well, thank you so much for sharing. That's an incredible story. Listeners out there, check for that boogeyman. Lock your windows. And if that still doesn't work, you fight. And never stop fighting.
Yep.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabby.
You're welcome.